Welcome to the Master Your Health podcast, your top resource for all things nutrition, health, fitness, and so much more. My name is Amanda Rocchio, best known for my meal prep and nutrition content, and today I'm here with my co-host, the research junkie between the two of us, and my husband, Chris Rocchio.
Hello, everyone. And real quick, let me just read a podcast review from one of our listeners. This is titled Awesome Podcast by Wags2066. I'm so glad I found this podcast. Each episode is so informative and easy to digest, pun intended. My personal favorites have been the fertility and pregnancy episodes. Thanks for the great content. Well, thank you for the great review.
Thank you so much. If you could take a moment, pause the podcast, and write us a review in Apple Podcasts, it would really mean so much to Chris and I. So right now I'm sipping on Organifi Immunity, but not into the mic because that would be an annoying noise. But this has been a product on my daily rotation lately. I've actually been using their immunity powder daily and their protein powder daily. But we wanted to break down some of the reasons why we love Organifi's immunity powder.
Yeah, especially going into the flu season. Obviously, we're dealing with COVID right now, so immune system health is really crucial. And a lot of people overlook their digestive system health when they are considering their immune system health, but they're one and the same because about 75-80% of your immune system resides in your digestive tract, because that's the primary methods that we would be ingesting something harmful to our body. And immunity actually has that digestive support blend in it, so it has that covered. It also has its immunity blend, which is the driving factor of the product, obviously, and that's got vitamin D, vitamin C, and a very powerful compound called mushroom beta-glucan. And beta-glucans are among the main health-promoting components of mushrooms, and they've been shown in many studies to activate white blood cells and modulate immune function in humans. And on top of that, researchers have observed anti-tumor, antimicrobial, and anti-allergic properties, as well as cholesterol and blood pressure-lowering properties. And beta-glucans also possess strong osteoporotic activities, and this has been shown in both animal and human studies. And you can find this research anywhere, but just to give you a couple studies, one was a 2012 study in Food and Nutrition Sciences, and that's a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled study. And another one was a 2017 meta-analysis from the International Journal of Molecular Sciences. So this stuff has been widely studied over the last 20, 30, 40 years. It's well-documented, and we're glad that they feature it in one of their best products.
Basically, mushroom beta-glucans are lit.
There you go. Amanda's got your contribution right there.
So you can find all our favorite Organifi products at Organifi.com/masteryourhealth and use code MASTERS with an S for 15% off all their wonderful, healthy, delicious products.
Yeah, check it out.
Getting into today's episode, we're talking about foods that help regulate blood sugar. Now, last week, we actually did an episode covering a lot around insulin resistance and insulin sensitivity. And the reason why we said this is so important is because it really relates to diabetes and the rise of prediabetes and type 2 diabetes in the U.S. Diabetes is actually a disease characterized by abnormally high blood sugar. So you would have learned that in our previous episode. So if you missed that, you can go back, listen to it. It was chock full of information. Now, the issue with having abnormally high blood sugar levels is that it can lead to complications like heart disease, kidney disease, and nerve damage, plus an array of other issues. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to go over really quick some of the terms we went through in the last podcast episode. So if you want to quiz yourself a little bit, you can pause it as I go through each term and kind of guess what I'm about to say. You know, fun little game here. So first off, we talked about insulin. So what does insulin do? Insulin is released by your pancreas to process glucose in your blood and use it for energy. It also helps shuffle around the blood sugar into different parts of your body, so into fat cells, into your muscles for glycogen storage, all of that stuff. So insulin sensitivity is a good thing. So when your body processes the sugar efficiently, that's when you have proper insulin function and you are insulin sensitive. Now, insulin resistance is not good. So that refers to when your cells are less affected by insulin. So this means you'll keep secreting insulin because the sugar stays in your blood and is not utilized by the cell. This is a result of years of a high-carb, insulin-spiking diet and also lots of sugar in your diet, and this will lead to your body being less able to process the sugar that you're constantly eating.
Right. That's an excellent breakdown of those key terms there, Amanda. But no, so it's crucial in terms of this podcast episode because we wanted to go through some foods that you can incorporate into your diet, not just lifestyle changes that we had in our last podcast, but actual things that you can start adding into your diet doesn't mean you have to change everything or eliminate a whole bunch of other things into your diet. It's probably good if you do, if you're pre-diabetic or diabetic, if you do cycle some things out of your diet. But let's just say adding these things will also help control blood sugar, slow the release of the sugar into your blood, and therefore kind of give your body a chance to catch up. And so it's just a kind of a strategic move to incorporate these things. So general rules that we talked about in the last podcast were eat a high protein, low carb diet. And those are carbs with a low glycemic index. And you can actually take any carbs and cook them and then cool them afterwards and then reheat them afterwards to produce something called resistant starch. And that's really good because it survives the digestive process and ends up feeding your healthy gut bacteria, which is really crucial. It produces short chain fatty acids, which is really good for your gut health because it helps the digestive tract lining, all these good things. So you can check out that podcast for a little bit more in-depth on all of these points, but I'm just going to run through the rest. Next one is incorporate high fiber foods. So veggies, whether they're raw, cooked, roasted, just get them in there. Eating healthy fats, you know, high amounts of omega-3 fatty acids to balance out the omega-6. This allows insulin receptors to bind more easily. And the average American has about a 20-to-1 ratio for omega-6 to omega-3s. And you want to be ideally closer to like a 4-to-1 or 1-to-1 ratio. 1-to-1 would be ideal, but if you're bring it down to about 4-to-1, that's obviously an improvement. You're going to want to limit liquid fructose in your diet, especially high fructose corn syrup. Make sure you're getting key nutrients like omega-3s, whether that's through fish oil, algae, however you can get it, magnesium, zinc, vitamin D, and vitamin K. And you can replace sugary drinks with, you know, water with lemon or cucumber in it, or maybe add some berries, or just switch to tea, whatever you can do to try to limit the amount of drinks that you're just taking a straight swig of sugar and it's just going to spike your blood sugar.
I know, you should try like some of those spa water combinations, really delicious, like mint and berries in some water is surprisingly refreshing. And let me say, this was the hardest switch I had my dad make, which was getting off orange juice in the morning. He loved it. He wouldn't stop drinking it. He thought, oh, it's so much better for you than soda. Yes, the ingredients are better, but there's a lot of sugar with no fiber when you're drinking juice. So that's why we recommend drinking like a juice that's mostly veggies and maybe like one fruit to sweeten it versus things like apple juice or orange juice. You're drinking a lot of fruits in one sitting, and it would be very difficult for you to eat all of that because you have to chew it, you have the fiber, all those things, but with the juice, the fiber is stripped. So
yeah, and if you don't want to take it out completely and you just want to limit it, or if it's just you want to transition and you really enjoy your glass of orange juice, then you can, you know, take something like, you know, some fiber pills that add about 2 grams into your diet. That'll just at least add a little bit of fiber in there to slow down that release of blood sugar. But yes, I mean, anything you can do to swap those out and do something as an alternative just while you're trying to improve the insulin sensitivity is obviously an ideal thing.
Basically, eat your oranges, don't drink them.
Exactly. All right, so foods for blood sugar regulation. Our first one is kind of an odd one that not too many people know about, which
but
is why
Chris is clearly obsessed. That's why it's number one on this list.
Exactly. Everybody needs to know about it. And they're called tiger nuts. And they're not actually a nut. They are made from a specific kind of root. And at one point in our evolution, this root consisted of up to 80% of our entire diet.
Oh, wow.
And it's because it has a little bit of protein, but has a moderate amount of carbs and a moderate amount of fat. And it's just a well-rounded plant with multiple nutrients and stuff like that that can be utilized. So extremely nutritious. It also has a very high amount of insoluble fiber, which is great because that's the fiber that passes through your gut without being digested. It also adds bulk to your stools to help you move food through your digestive tract a little bit better. It also has resistant starch, which is great because it enhances the population of a beneficial strand of bacteria in our gut microbiota. Like I said before, it increases the concentration of short-chain fatty acids, which is a good source of energy for the cells that line the colon. And it improves microbial metabolism and increases insulin sensitivity. So all good things, definitely relevant for what we're talking about here. And like I said before, fiber can help reduce blood sugar levels because it slows the release of sugar into the bloodstream.
So kids, eat your tiger nuts.
Yeah, I mean, you can find them on Amazon. There's a few brands that sell them on there. I'm pretty sure you can find them at Whole Foods, but they're not that expensive. Just try to order them to your house. Probably the easiest way to get them.
I'm just waiting for you to be a salesman for Tiger Nuts.
I'm
so
waiting
obsessed.
For somebody to hit me up. But so far, I'm telling you guys, I'm your best resource out here. I've been repping Tiger Nuts out here for years.
Yeah, absolutely. This is not something new for Chris.
Yeah, holler.
So next on our list are berries. This is also something that I try to get my dad to add in daily. Again, he is actually diabetic, so this is what I'm trying to slowly transition his diet. He's a little bit older. It's hard to get him to change too much at once. But there are numerous studies that have linked berry intake with improved blood sugar control. Now, the thing is with berries is they're loaded with fiber, vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants, which makes it an excellent choice for people with blood sugar management issues. I know, I'm like, Dad, eat some eggs for breakfast with a handful of blueberries and some vegetables. You'll be set. Cut it out with the bread and cheese. I'm never going to get him to cut out the bread and cheese, but no. So a 2019 study found that eating 2 cups, about 250 grams of red raspberries with a high carb meal significantly reduced post-meal insulin and blood sugar levels in adults with pre-diabetes compared to the control group. So here's a study kind of showing you that it is beneficial when it comes to regulating blood sugar. And really, any berry will do. It doesn't have to be raspberries. And some experts actually say the darker the berry, the better. So add in blackberries, blueberries to your list. I know Chris's favorite is blackberries, which is kind of unique. I feel like they're a little more like sour than the other ones to me.
That's why I like them.
Yeah.
All right. So next is Ceylon cinnamon or cinnamon extract. And Ceylon cinnamon is called the true cinnamon. It's a bit more expensive compared to what you usually get, which is the variant called cassia cinnamon. And has a large amount of antioxidants. And one study showed that consuming 500 milligrams of cinnamon extract daily for 12 weeks decreased a marker of oxidative stress by 14% in adults with prediabetes. And this is significant because oxidative stress has been implicated in the development of nearly every chronic disease, including type 2 diabetes. And researchers say that it may be able to imitate the effects of insulin in the blood and increase insulin sensitivity, which means it's making your body more efficient at moving glucose into the cell and thus reducing blood sugar. I mean, at least that's what the theory is after a couple studies involving 7 or 8 people. So it's not too big of studies with big sample sizes, but, you know, preliminary things that are promising. But regardless of how small these studies are with 7 or 8 people, they did show prolonged increases in insulin sensitivity after consumption. And so one study showed that the prolonged insulin sensitivity was actually like after the meal, say, you know, 6 to 8 hours. But then another study, which was a prolonged study that showed that people were ingesting this cinnamon extract for a couple weeks every day, showed that it actually had improvements over the next couple weeks.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it showed that it's not only short-term, but also intermediate-term effects. And Ceylon cinnamon may actually lower fasting blood sugar, but this was an association study, so it's still going to need some follow-up, but it was a review of 543 people with type 2 diabetes, found taking it was associated with an average decrease of over 24 milligrams per deciliter. And just so you know, I'll have these studies in the show notes. And lastly, it may decrease HbA1c, which is a biomarker that measures long-term blood sugar control. But this is up in the air because several studies have yielded conflicting results. But there's enough research here to show that, you know, Ceylon cinnamon and its use every day is promising. And not only that, I mean, like, how hard is it to throw some cinnamon in? It's not like it's, you know, mustard seed powder. You know that trick we're going to tell you a little bit later about, you know, adding mustard seed powder to cruciferous vegetables. And that's a little unpleasant. It's not exactly the best tasting thing, but cinnamon in your oatmeal, I mean, it just makes everything better. So it shouldn't even be that hard.
I feel like there's a reason why it goes with sweet things. That's what kind of made me realize. Like, I wonder if it tastes good with sweet things for a reason, because it has all these benefits from eating it with sugary carb meals.
I don't know, babe.
It's possible. But also to note here, you should order the Ceylon cinnamon online probably, because it's hard to tell, you know, what cinnamon they're using in the store-bought spices. And then you can replace it in the cinnamon spice thing you have. So don't throw it out. Replace it in there. Mm-hmm. Chris was the one that taught me that, actually.
Yeah, you can actually buy the spices in the replacement bags that are just not having to buy the entire glass bottle and redo that every time. You can just buy them for like $1.99 at the end aisles in these little plastic bags and then just dump them in your dispenser that you already have. So, you know, so also some conservationism there with not overusing resources and stuff.
Absolutely. Here we go. Smart move. Next on our list is greens. So your mama was right when she told you to eat your greens. Things like kale, cabbage, chard, spinach, all that stuff is important to have in your diet. Now they're full of fiber and flavonoid antioxidants, and you don't have to just eat them in salads. Like you can, of course, make kale chips. I actually like to sneak some spinach into a protein shake because it doesn't really have much flavor. Mm-hmm. So that's a nice little hack there. I don't really like kale that much plain in a salad. I usually like to saute it with a little olive oil or some sea salt. Don't be afraid to use some salt on your vegetables. That's not really the issue when it comes to sodium. It's more of these highly processed foods. So make your greens taste good and make sure you're getting your daily dose of greens.
Yes, exactly. All right, next one is broccoli or sprouts. And really any cruciferous vegetable here because of the sulforaphane content, which has blood sugar reducing properties. And the thing about sulforaphane is that the enzyme needed to utilize the compound is destroyed by cooking too much. So if you're roasting or over sauteing your veggies, then you're gonna destroy this enzyme that's called myrosinase. But like I said before, you can add some mustard seed powder back into it and that'll reintroduce myrosinase into the dish. So if you like your veggies cooked and you don't like to lightly steam them or eat them raw, which is the way to cook them if you want to preserve that enzyme, then this is the way to go about it. But back to sulforaphane. So this is great because it's been shown in studies to enhance insulin sensitivity and reduce blood sugar in type 2 diabetics. And there's a couple studies in the show notes that you can reference there. But this is also tied into the same benefits of just adding more greens and adding more veggies into your diet, you know, the fiber, everything like that. But just the extra added sulforaphane content of cruciferous vegetables is just a bonus.
Absolutely. I always forget to add that mustard seed powder. I know it's right there in our cabinet staring me in the face. So next time, gotta remember. Mm-hmm. So another one to add to your diet is seafood. This is one of my favorites. I love to order it when I go out to a restaurant. So it might be an excuse to try more seafood when you're out and about. But seafood is a valuable source of protein, healthy fats, vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants that may help regulate blood sugar levels. Now, we've talked about how important protein is before, but protein is also essential for blood sugar control. It helps slow down digestion and prevents post-meal blood sugar spikes, as well as increases feelings of fullness. I know for me, if I add protein to a meal, I do leave the meal feeling a lot more satisfied and full faster, for sure. Like, carbs don't really make me feel that way most of the time. Mm-hmm. Plus, protein can help prevent overeating and promote excess body fat loss. So these are two effects that are essential for healthy blood sugar control. Again, overeating can cause your blood sugar to spike even higher, of course. Additionally, a study with 68 adults who were either overweight or obese consumed 26 ounces of fatty fish per week, had significant improvements in post-meal blood sugar levels than compared with those who consumed lean fish. So this goes back to Chris's point earlier about increasing omega-3s, and the fatty fish will really help get those levels up. So that's why you see in this study that it was more improvements with the fatty fish group versus the lean fish group.
All right, so next on the list is pumpkin seeds. And these are great because they're high in carbs called polysaccharides, which have been studied for their blood sugar regulating potential. And treatment with pumpkin extracts and powders have been shown to significantly decrease blood sugar levels in both human and animal studies. So for instance, a 2018 study in 40 people found that consuming 2 ounces of pumpkin seeds reduced post-meal blood sugar by up to 35%, and that's compared to a control group. So 35% is extremely significant. And another one is okra, which is less known and less used in America, at least in the circles that I grew up around.
Yeah, I like rarely heard about okra.
I think
okra.
I only tried okra for the first time like 5 years ago.
But I can think of some kind of comedy skit where someone's like, okra. I don't know what I have no idea where it's
I think you're just pulling that out.
I'm just making that up.
Yeah, exactly. But this is another food with similar blood sugar lowering compounds. And like pumpkin seeds, it's also due to its polysaccharides and flavonoid antioxidant content. So the main polysaccharide in okra, so I'm going to try to pronounce this, it's called rhamnogalactironin, and it's identified as a powerful anti-diabetic compound. Plus, okra contains flavonoids isoquercetin and quercetin 3-O-gentiobiocide, which help reduce blood sugar by inhibiting certain enzymes. So sorry with the over technical terms there.
All I know is I'm glad I didn't have that section.
I thought that it was important to show you exactly some of the compounds. I'm not just like throwing these out here and assuming you're just going to believe me. If you want to look into these things, then this is just a way for you to be able to follow up and look at the mechanism at play here.
Absolutely. No, it's always good to hear some of these scientific details in general. Mm-hmm. So another one to add to your diet would be nuts or nut butter. Together, nuts on a low-carb diet can be really beneficial to help with overall blood sugar control. So a study in 25 people with type 2 diabetes demonstrated that consuming both peanuts and almonds throughout the day as part of a low-carb diet reduced both fasting and post-meal blood sugar levels. I do love both those nuts. Mm-hmm. Another review found diets emphasizing tree nuts at an average daily intake of 2 ounces, about 56 grams, significantly reduced fasting blood sugar and hemoglobin A1C, which is a marker of long-term blood sugar control, compared with a control group in people with type 2 diabetes. So here's another study that showed that eating more nuts to be beneficial for people with type 2 diabetes in particular. So again, I like eating more whole food nuts because I do find they're a little bit harder to overconsume. Like a salty nut butter can be a lot easier to overconsume. You know, you're sitting at the tub and next thing you know, you're 3 tablespoons later and it's like 500 calories. So that's something to consider of like how well you can portion out your nut butter. But I also do think nut butters are great too. And make sure to look out for a nut butter without the added sugar, because a lot of the conventional ones have added sugar and you want one that's probably just nuts or nuts and salt.
Right. And the next one on our list is really important. It's fermented foods. And I always talk about this as something that is crucial in every diet. I know I incorporate these in my diet at least once every other day, but I really should be striving to get it into my body once a day. These things are crucial, whether this is kimchi, sauerkraut. I highly recommend you should at least have some in your fridge. It doesn't go bad very easily, so just have some in your fridge to throw on your plate every now and then. They have all kinds of benefits for your body. I mean, probiotics, minerals, antioxidants. And a study in 21 people with prediabetes found that eating fermented kimchi for 8 weeks improved glucose tolerance in 33% of the participants, while only 9.5% of participants who consumed fresh cabbage showed improved glucose tolerance. So this is actually a really good case that proves one of our earlier points, because 9.5% of the participants just incorporated fresh cabbage, so just greens, veggies, into their diet without fermented foods, and that improved. But there's significantly more people who improved their glucose tolerance when that cabbage was fermented. So this just takes a previous point to the next level, really, right? Another study in 41 people with diabetes demonstrated that following a traditional Korean diet rich in fermented foods like kimchi for 12 weeks led to greater reductions in hemoglobin A1C than a controlled diet. And as a reminder, hemoglobin A1C is that biomarker for long-term blood sugar control. So as you can see, adding this to your diet can have drastic effects. And some people can kind of be a little bit overwhelmed by the tangy saltiness of kimchi and sauerkraut, but I think it's not as much of an acquired taste as other foods, but it takes some getting used to, but you know, just deal with that learning curve.
I also like this list because it's a reminder of where I've been slacking on. So I really haven't been doing as much kimchi as sauerkraut as I used to. So let's get back on it together. Next on our list are chia and flax seeds. So I know it's usually like bloggers making chia seed pudding and putting chia seeds and everything, but there's a reason for that. There are some definite benefits from adding chia seeds or flax seeds to your meals, to your snacks, all that stuff. So they're both rich in fiber and ALA, which is a plant omega-3. So it's kind of like the plant version of omega-3s. So a lot of these studies done with flax seeds are associative, but here's one that's pretty interesting where an 8-week study done with 57 people who had type 2 diabetes, those who consumed 7 ounces of 2.5% fat yogurt containing 1 ounce of flax seeds per day experienced significant reduction in hemoglobin A1C compared with those who just consumed plain yogurt. So add some flaxseed to your yogurt, you know, add some cinnamon, add a little bit of stevia.
Some berries.
You got yourself a delicious combination right there. Also, another review of 25 controlled studies found that eating whole flaxseeds led to significant improvements in blood sugar controls. So, you know, more reasons to add these chia seeds or flaxseeds to any of your meals.
Right. And next on our list is eggs. And this is crucial. I mean, I sometimes take a break from eggs, but eggs to me are some of the best things you can have in your diet, period, whether you need to control blood sugar or not. But specifically for this, so there was a study in this 12-week parallel randomized controlled trial, 42 overweight or obese individuals between the ages of 40 and 75 with pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes were included in this. So regular egg consumption resulted in improvements of fasting blood glucose, which was significantly reduced by 4.4% at the final visit in the egg group. It also showed a significant lowering of insulin resistance, which is, as Amanda covered at the very beginning of the podcast, is a good thing to be lowering because insulin resistance and all its implications are all bad things. So lastly, daily consumption of one large egg may reduce the risk of diabetes without having any adverse effects on lipid profiles. And that's in individuals with pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, I like to think of eggs as Mother Nature's multivitamin. There's really so much nutrient dense in one egg. And obviously with the yolk, you want to get both. And like we said, if you are trying to lose weight, you could do an omelet with a couple eggs and some egg whites just for the leanness. But again, you really want to get at least one whole egg.
Yeah, we always have a carton of egg whites in there. So I personally will do, you know, 2-3 full eggs and then, you know, the other 2 eggs just in the egg whites. That way I'm not having like 5 yolks. But I have had 5 yolks before and I have perfect cholesterol levels every time. So I'm obviously not a hyper responder, but yeah, don't be scared.
So last on our list is cilantro. I know technically it's not a food, it's an herb, but there have been some good preliminary studies showing that cilantro may reduce blood sugar. But this has only been shown in animals, not in humans yet. So TBD, the jury's still out on cilantro, but definitely can't hurt. I love cilantro to flavor my food. I think it's delicious. I know there's that weird thing, though, where a percentage of the population, cilantro tastes like soap to them, which boggles my mind because I absolutely love adding cilantro to our food. But hey.
Soap? I would never even make
that. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's so interesting. I wonder what percentage it is. Mm-hmm. So to wrap up this podcast on foods to regulate blood sugar, I wanted to go over a myth really quick that's relating to gluten and gluten-free foods. So it's kind of thought of that gluten-free foods automatically means it's healthy, it's healthier for a diabetic, but that is just not the case. A lot of these gluten-free foods are enriched with things like tapioca starch or brown rice syrup, which spikes blood glucose more than wheat would have actually. So it's not just Cheetos and Pepsis that spike your blood glucose, but it's also some of these quote-unquote health foods, maybe labeled gluten-free, that can also spike your blood sugar. So I know for me, like, I actually like to incorporate Ezekiel bread because it's a sprouted bread, does have fiber. It may not be the right fit for you if you're pre-diabetic, but again, if I was thinking by, you know, some conventional thought, I'd go for the gluten-free bread. Whereas Ezekiel does have gluten, but it has a lot of other benefits than some of the other breads out there. So something to consider to really understand what's going on in your food and not just go by the front of the package that says gluten-free, no added sugars, doesn't mean it's not still high in sugar. So make sure to read the ingredient label, the ingredients, and also take a look at the sugar and fiber ratio.
Right. And it just goes back to what we were talking about that, you know, as a general rule, following a whole foods diet, especially when you're dealing with these conditions right here, a whole foods diet is significantly better for improving these biomarkers. Specifically, in this case, optimal blood sugar control. And so whether you have prediabetes, diabetes, or you just want to lower your risk of developing these conditions, including these foods are going to be a major benefit, especially if you haven't been including them before. They're definitely going to be a level up in terms of your overall health and your journey to get healthier. But also remember that it's not just like you can just throw these foods in as part of a imbalanced nutrition plan is going to save the day for you. Bottom line is an overall, like we were saying before, trying to get as close to a whole foods diet as you can. And also in our previous podcast, going through some of the lifestyle changes that you can do to help improve this. It's an overall thing. It's not just, oh, I'm just going to add this to a crappy diet and it's going to fix everything for me. So that's things like less sedentary activity. Doesn't mean you have to go hit the gym 5 days a week, but just be less sedentary, get more movement. Or if you want to take it to the next level, actually hit the gym and do some anaerobic or just do some running, do some sprints, whatever you have to do to get moving, just move more. So there's just certain things. And if you'd, like we said, go back and visit that podcast if you want the lifestyle changes as well as the food additions. But overall, you can optimize your blood sugar control, protect against chronic disease, optimize overall health by taking in everything as a large consideration and not just isolated in just one area.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. We hope you got so much value out of today's episode. Please share it with your friends, share it with your family members, and don't forget to leave us a review. It really means so much to us, and we read all of them.
Yep. Thanks for listening.
Catch you on the next episode. Bye.
See you.